Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading of the 10th chapter of the 7th canto, entitled Prahlad, the Best Among Exalted Devotees, and text number 11. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Naikantano me maija tviha shisha. Asha shite mutraye chaye bhavad vidaha. Tatapi manvantarameta datra. Daityeshwaranam anu, I'm sorry, anubung swabhogan. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Naikantano me maija tviha shisha. Asha shite mutra chaye bhavad vidaha. Tatapi manvantaram etadatra. Daityeshwaranam anubung swabhogan. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Naikantano me maija tviha shisha. Asha shite mutra chaye bhavad vidaha. Tatapi manvantaram etadatra. Daityeshwaranam anubung swabhogan. Ladies, please. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Na, not. Ekantana, unalloyed, without desires except for the one desire for devotional service. May, from me, mayi, unto me, jatu, anytime, eha, within this material world, ashishaha, benedictions, ashasate, intent desire, amutra, in the next life, cha, and yea, all such devotees who, bhavat vidaha, like you, tatapi, still, manvantaram, the duration of time, until the end of the life of one Manu, etat, this, atra, within this material world, daitya ishvaranam, of the opulences of materialistic persons, anubhungshva, you can enjoy, bhogan, all material opulences. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Supreme Personality Godhead said, My dear Prahlad, a devotee like you never desires any kind of material opulences, either in this life or in the next. Nonetheless, I order you to enjoy the opulences of the demons in this material world, acting as their king, until the end of the duration of time occupied by Manu. Purport. One Manu lives for a duration of time calculated to be an aggregate of 71 yuga cycles, each of which equals 4,300,000 years. Although atheistic men like to enjoy material opulences, and they endeavor with great energy to build big residences, roads, cities, and factories, unfortunately, they cannot live more than 80, 90, or at the utmost 100 years. Although the materialist exerts so much energy to create a kingdom of hallucinations, he is unable to enjoy it for more than a few years. However, because Prahlad Maharaj was a devotee, the Lord allowed him to enjoy material opulence as the king of the materialists. Prahlad Maharaj had taken birth in the family of Hiranyakashipu, who is the topmost materialist. And since Prahlad was the bona fide heir of his father, the Supreme Lord allowed him to enjoy the kingdom created by his father for so many years that no materialist could calculate them. A devotee does not have to desire material opulence, but if he is a pure devotee, there is ample opportunity for him to enjoy material happiness also, without personal endeavor. Therefore, everyone is advised to take to devotional service under all circumstances. If one desires material opulences, he can also become a pure devotee, and his desires will be fulfilled. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Akama sarva kamo va moksha kamo daridhi Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushamparam. Whether one desires everything or nothing, or whether he desires to merge into the existence of the Lord, he is intelligent only if he worships Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by rendering transcendental loving service. Om Ganita Mirandasya Ganajana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilita Nyena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Namaha Vishnupadai Krishna Saivudali Shimate Praladananda Sanitone Namaha Vishnupadai Krishna Saivudali Shimate Bhaktivedanta Sanitone Namaste Sarsavrati Deve Gauravani Vicharani Nirvishesha Shunivadi Pashyate Ate Shatarni So this section is very informative and important for all devotees. Just like other sections in the Bhagavatam, it talks about great devotees being awarded incredible benedictions that would beguile the minds of ordinary people. Like, for instance, Dhruva Maharaj. So here in the purport, Prabhupada mentions that, and also in the text itself, Prahlad Maharaj was given the benediction that he could enjoy being the king of these demons for the duration of one Manu. One Manu lives for 71 Divya Yugas. In other words, 71 cycles of Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Kali Yuga, which is an incredibly long amount of time. That's why Prabhupada says that an ordinary person is not able to conceive of how long this actually is. Most people can't even conceive of how long their own life is, even though one life is very short. You know, most people only live somewhere between 60 to 80, and as Prabhupada said, at most 100 years. And we can't even conceive of 60 years of existence. A good percentage of which is lost during sleep. I think Prahlad Maharaj, he broke it down earlier to his classmates, actually. You know, so many years of our life are lost due to sleep. So many years of our life are lost due to eating. So many years of our life is wasted in youth. So many years of our life is wasted in old age. So in total, we actually only have about 10 or 20 years of life that's actually useful. Out of these, you know, 60 or 80 years of life that we actually live, only 10 or 20 of those years are actually useful years. Kind of gives a little bit different perspective on things. You know, I've been at the temple here 10 years, so there's half my useful existence. So Prahlad Maharaj, he was given the benediction that he would live for the duration of one Manu, which if you multiply it out, it comes out to being 305 million years, 305,300,000 years. We can't even wrap our head around 60 tiny little years. And yet here he is living for 305,300,000 years. And even still, such a supposedly long life is hardly even a blip on the total radar. Lord Brahma's 12 hours equals 1,000 of these yuga cycles. Manu's existence is only 71 yuga cycles. So that's not even 1/10 of Lord Brahma's day. You know, so Dhruva Maharaj, he's only living for maybe 45 minutes in the duration of Lord Brahma's life, which is just hardly even a blip. I mean, you can have a conversation with somebody for 45 minutes. You know, so imagine talking with somebody when they're from their very birth and then ending the conversation when they die. That's how long it is for Lord Brahma. But yeah, from our perspective, how can you understand 300 million years? You can't. So another important point is that no matter what kind of desires we have, the main point is to approach Krishna. Because actually the whole reason why we're here in this material world is to satisfy our desires. And Krishna is so kind that even though these demonic desires that we have disturb the spiritual world. See, the spiritual world, and especially and specifically also Goloka Vrindavan, it's permeated with Madhurya Ras, or very sweet mellow, very sweet taste and relationship. And Radha Krishna don't allow anything to spoil that sweetness. But at the same time, living entities still need a place to try to satisfy these different desires. So rather than spoiling the sweetness of the spiritual world, we get kicked out to this material world so we can cooperatively or antagonistically, depending upon your perspective, spoil each other's sweetness. So all the demons are put into one place. Anyone who's not in the spiritual world ultimately comes here because they have some sort of demonic mentality. And so everyone with a materialistic mentality can antagonistically spoil each other's sweetness here. And Krishna also gives us the intelligence how to do this, how to try to satisfy our materialistic desires. Because ultimately we're coming here because we want to be God. We want to be recognized. We want to be the supreme. We want everyone else to bow down and respect us. And we get angry and criticize other people. Why aren't you giving me the respect I deserve? Bow down and kiss my feet. But that's the mood. That's the attitude. And it's disgusting. But yet Krishna is so merciful that he creates the separate world called the material world so we can actually do these disgusting activities. In the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Krishna says, Sarvasya chaham hriti sannivishto matak smritir jnanam apohanam cha vedaisya sarveraham eva vedya vedanta krit vedavit eva chaham. Krishna is saying, I'm the one who's giving knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Krishna is sitting within the heart of all living entities. And he's the one who is inspiring us how to satisfy our demonic desires. As the saying goes, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. It's not that Krishna is forcing us to engage in these demonic propensities. Rather, it's by our own desire that we're engaging in these demonic propensities. But yet Krishna is giving us the intelligence. He's giving us the knowledge how to satisfy these desires. But what does it bring? When we use the knowledge and inspiration that Krishna gives to satisfy our perverted desires, it only generates lust. And as Krishna says earlier in the Gita, in 3:37, it's lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material modes of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is all the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So that's really what we're here for. We're here to satisfy our lust. Lust is the perverted reflection of love. In the spiritual world, everyone has very deep, profound, and never inexhaustible love for Krishna. Here in the material world, everyone has very deep, profound, and inexhaustible lust for satisfying their own senses. It's the same motivation, it's just that the person to whom the actions are directed is changed. Rather than engaging in different activities for the pleasure and satisfaction of Krishna, we're engaging in activities for the pleasure and satisfaction of our own selfish desires. But don't worry, there's still hope. As Prabhupada says in the purport to that verse, Prabhupada says that they also have partial independence, but by misuse of their independence, when the service attitude is transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment, they come under the sway of lust. This material creation is created by the Lord to give facility to the conditioned souls to fulfill these lustful propensities. And when completely baffled by prolonged lustful activities, the living entities begin to inquire about their real position. This is what's necessary. So when we're going about trying to satisfy our lusty desires, and we notice that nobody's giving us the respect that we think we deserve, eventually we'll get frustrated and we'll get baffled. And we'll try to consider, why is it that nobody's respecting me when I'm full of these lusty desires? And then eventually we'll get a little bit of spiritual insight by the mercy of the devotees, by the mercy of Krishna. And then we'll realize, oh, I'm not God. I'm actually this very demonic, materialistic person. So let me endeavor for spiritual enlightenment. And that's the beginning. Prabhupada goes further in the purport to say, to talk about the Vedic aphorism, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. That's what happens when we become baffled in our lusty desires. We begin to inquire, to ask the right question, rather than asking, why isn't anyone respecting me? Don't you see who I am? Instead, we start asking, who am I? What am I here for? What's the purpose of life? Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Prabhupada translates that, now inquire into the nature of the Absolute. By now, Prabhupada has indicated that that means now that we have this human form of life. There's 8,400,000 different species of life, and we're wandering in these different species, baffled with lusty desires. And finally, once we have this human form of life, and we're completely frustrated in our attempts to try to satisfy that lust, then we begin asking the real question, inquiring into the nature of the Absolute Truth. Who is God? What am I? Who am I? What's my relationship with God? Why am I here in this material world? What's the nature of the spiritual world? How does this all fit together? These are the real questions. Rather than questioning, why aren't people seeing how I'm God? Why aren't people respecting me for what I really am? Full of false pride and false ego. And just getting more angry and wrathful when people don't respect you. And then also in the Bhagavatam, in the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. See, Dhruva was pretty amazing because when he first began his austerities and penances, he was full of material desires. He was so ambitious in his material desires that we can't even comprehend the degree of his ambition. Usually in modern times, so-called modern times, when people are viewed as being ambitious, you know, they're just going after, like, you know, a fancy house in Malibu, or, you know, a fancy car to drive, or having an entourage of people from the opposite sex following you around. And this is considered, you know, extraordinarily ambitious. Ooh, wow, look at him, you know, trying to pull himself up by his bootstraps, coming from the ghetto and trying to make a name for himself. You know, that's considered like big ambition. Who do you think you are? You know, but look at Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was the child of the unfavored queen. And he was destined to not get anything. He wasn't going to inherit anything of the kingdom. Because the favored queen's son was actually going to inherit the kingdom. And it was so grossly shoved in his face that actually the other queen, when Dhruva Maharaj tried to sit on the king's lap, the other queen blocked him and said, no, who do you think you are trying to sit on your father's lap? You have to die first. Go and die, and then take birth from my womb, then you can sit on your father's lap. That's pretty severe. That's like, why don't you go die? That's what he was told by the favorite queen. And so naturally, being a Kshatriya, he got really angry and upset, and he went to the forest. Because his mother told him that only God, only Krishna can satisfy your desires. So Dhruva said, well, where is Krishna? And then his mother said, well, I've heard from different saintly people that they go to the forest to try to find Krishna. They go to the jungle. And she was so innocent in her nature that she wasn't considering that the saintly people go to the jungle so they can be secluded from society, so they can participate in austerities and penances for self-purification. So then Vishnu or Krishna will actually come to them. She was thinking that Krishna is hiding in the jungle somewhere, and that if Dhruva Maharaj goes there, maybe he can find Krishna. So still, with the innocence and purity of a five-year-old child, Dhruva Maharaj goes anyway, looking, checking behind rocks and around trees, and where's Krishna? So then Narada Muni sees him, and Narada Muni says, little boy, what are you doing in this dangerous jungle? Why don't you go home and play with your friends? And Dhruva Maharaj got really angry at him. How dare you tell me to go home and play with my friends? I'm here to find the Supreme Personality of Godhead. See, because Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted a kingdom greater than that of his great-grandfather, Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is the king, you could say, the king of the entire universe. He's the demigod in charge of overseeing the functions of this entire universe. No demigod is supreme to Brahma. Granted, Shiva's in a separate category, and Vishnu is not a demigod, he's God himself. So Lord Brahma actually has ultimate control over this material universe. And Dhruva Maharaj wanted a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma, greater than the entire universe. Talk about ambition. So finally Narada Muni instructed him in a mantra, told him, you chant this mantra with great sincerity and Vishnu will come. He will actually appear before you and he'll grant you a benediction. He'll grant your desire. So he did, and then when Vishnu actually appeared before him, Dhruva Maharaj was overwhelmed. He didn't know what to do. From within his heart, he sincerely desired to offer wonderful prayers and glorification of Vishnu, but being a five-year-old child, he didn't have the knowledge yet of how to offer prayers. So Vishnu, seeing his predicament, he placed his conch on Dhruva Maharaj's head. And then he was imbued with all transcendental knowledge by being touched with the conch. And then he offered these wonderful prayers. So, in the purport, when it's in this Drupa pastime, in the purport to 4.9.17, Prabhupada explains, the Lord is so merciful that not only does He fulfill the desires of a devotee who is driven by ignorance and desires for material benefit, but He also gives such a devotee all protection, just as a cow gives milk to a newly born calf. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's said that the Lord gives intelligence to the constantly engaged devotee so that he may gradually approach the Lord without difficulty. A devotee must be very sincere in his devotional service. Then, although there may be many things wrong on the devotee's part, Krishna will guide him and gradually elevate him to the highest position of devotional service. So this is the nature. The thing is, we're all in the shower. Sometimes it's explained that engaging in Krishna consciousness, we're like in the shower and we're trying to get freed from all the material contamination that's covering us. And that's the important point also. Because we're in the shower, we're not necessarily completely pure. But we have the desire of wanting to be pure. And so given the proper amount of time, and given the mercy of the other devotees and the mercy of Krishna, eventually we will actually achieve that purified state. But as Prabhupada mentions, it requires great sincerity. And sincerity requires truthfulness. So we must be honest and truthful with ourselves, not fooling ourselves, and then endeavor with great sincerity. And when we begin to notice these little clumps of dirt on us, you know, actually take it off. Because we are in the shower trying to get purified. It's not that we just turn a blind eye out of false pride. And, oh, I don't have any dirt on me. Oh, I'm pure already. You know, recognize the fault and endeavor to get rid of it. In this way, we can actually come to that purified platform. So I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Arjita Prabhu.
First of all, do we know... Because we know Krishna comes once in a day of Brahma. So does Lord Nrisimhadev come once in a day of Brahma also, meaning this Prahlad pastime? Is that once every day of Brahma, or is it every Satya Yuga? Because based on the numbers, you know, 300 plus million years of Prahlad's life, if it's the last Satya Yuga, then he's still here. It seems a lot of his pastimes occurred right here on earth. So we mean that Prahlad is still here on earth somewhere, if he's living that long. Or is it only once in a day of Brahma? Does Lord Nrisimhadev come the same time of day that Krishna comes, just like we know Lord Chaitanya comes in that Kali Yuga following Krishna's appearance?
Well, first of all, it's mentioned Krishna comes once in the day of Brahma, not Nrisimhadev. I don't recall reading anywhere where it says that Nrisimhadev comes in a cyclic cycle. Just like we don't read about Varahadev coming in some cyclic cycle. It specifically mentions Krishna. Krishna coming once in the day of Brahma. And if you actually do the calculations, in Lord Brahma's time, it works out that Krishna is coming around to check out the universe at about 10:45 in the morning every day during Brahma's time. And then he comes to exhibit his pastimes, and then he leaves. Then he comes at 10:45 again the next day. Kind of like he's checking in or something. Just seeing how things are going, you know, just like when Savas, at a certain time, he'll go throughout the community, check out how everything's going on, then he'll go to his office and continue doing things.
But the other incarnations do come in a cycle. Pralaya Payadi Zale, just like Matsya avatar. It comes when there's a particular devastation. That's happening all the time. Krishna is known as Triyuga. Certain avatars come every single yuga. They're on a cycle, just like Krishna's on a cycle, but I'm just not sure what Lord Nrisimhadev's cycle is, but they all come cyclically. That's why they're Dasa Avatar, those 10 prime incarnations, they come on a regular cycle. But what I'm specifically thinking about Prahlad, because Prahlad's life, you said correctly, is over 300 million years. Is he still here? We know that certain personalities are still here. Ashwatthama is still here, that's stated. Vyasadeva is still here. But it would be nice to be able to go visit Prahlad sometime.
Well, that's hard to know because in the Bhagavatam, you know, it's a Purana. And so it's not necessarily in chronological order. In some of the pastimes, it's in previous Satyugas. You know, some of the pastimes are within the recent Yugas. So it's hard to really pinpoint exactly when it happened. And to my knowledge, I haven't read anywhere where it indicates what sort of cycle he's on. If he's even on a cycle, I don't know. I haven't seen anything specifically to that.
I remember reading in the Lagu Bhavatamrita, Rupa Goswami explains that Lord Nrisimhadev comes twice in the day of Brahma. Krishna once, this is Lord Ramachandra also once, Varaha is twice. But explained by Rupa Goswami in Lagu Bhavatamrita.
Yeah, thank you. Back to Anthony Prabhu.
Thank you for the wonderful class. I was just wondering, in this purport, it says that a devotee does not have to desire material opulence, but if he is a pure devotee, there is ample opportunity for him to enjoy material happiness also, without personal endeavor. I was just wondering, if someone was a pure devotee and Krishna gave him material happiness, wouldn't this happiness not be material because he's a pure devotee?
Well, you're mixing two things up here. You know, in what you just read is mentioning material opulences. Happiness is not an opulence.
No, I mean like, he gives him opportunity for him to enjoy material happiness also, it says. But wouldn't this happiness not be material happiness since he's a pure devotee?
Well, you know, from a materialistic perspective, from materialists, it would be considered material happiness, namely enjoying material opulences. But from a devotional perspective, you're right. It's not material happiness. Because the thing is, the pure devotee is ambivalent towards material opulences. In other words, to a pure devotee, it doesn't matter whether he has material opulences or not. He's fixed in his devotional service. Just like Sudama Brahman. Sudama Brahman was extremely poor. And he didn't mind being extremely poor. He was still happy in his service and happy with his life. But Krishna, wanting to satisfy the desires of Sudama Brahman's wife, he gave Sudama Brahman extraordinary opulences, greater than that of Indra. And Sudama Brahman, he was just as happy as before when he was poor. It didn't matter to him. You know, so a pure devotee, he's happy regardless, whether he has the opulences or not. So it's not that by getting these material opulences, all of a sudden the pure devotee will become happy. No, that's not the case. The pure devotee is already happy. And then whether he has no material opulences or whether he has all material opulences, he's still doing the same thing. He's just engaging whatever he has in Krishna's service.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of on the same subject. And the next sentence it says, if one desires material opulence, he can also become a pure devotee, and his desires will be fulfilled. Does that mean if one at first has the desire for material opulence and he goes to the Supreme Lord to fulfill this desire, that his desire will become purified? Or is that what that means?
Yeah, it means that eventually he'll be purified of his material desires. You know, just like Dhruva Maharaj, he went desiring a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. But by the time that Vishnu came to grant him a benediction, his heart had already been purified from wanting that desire. But still, because he was desiring that when he began his austerities, Vishnu still granted him that desire, even though at the time he didn't want it anymore. So it's getting late. We'll end there. Gram Tar Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.